Men are very angry.
Right, but the anger of a man is that of a woman.
No. Where are you getting all the stuff you say from?
My guest is my next guest here for this next hour, the last hour of today, is Reverend Jeanette Wilson, a smart, smart lady. She is a radio and TV talk show host. She is a lawyer, an attorney. She has a degree in chemist degree. So this woman, this is a smart lady. She worked for Operation Push, executive director of Operation Push, Jesse Jackson organization at one time. I think she still worked with them in a way, but right now she has a national Sunday school broadcast radio and I believe TV show that she's doing. And we're going to be talking to her about that. We're going to be talking about the war and different issues, things that she's doing to within her community there in Illinois, and also give you our information how you could get with her. As soon as we get our guest, hip-hop music, we're going to be talking to her about that and the exploitation of women in that within that so-called music. We'll be dealing with her. She'll be dealing with those issues as well. There was a protest held in Illinois, anti-war protest that she spoke at. She's going to be talking to us about that as well. They are trying to get her on the air. I'll tell you her success is a long list here. We're going to give out her website. You can read more about what she's doing. At Bond, we're rebuilding the family by rebuilding the man. Okay, I believe we have Reverend Wilson.
How are you?
Are you there, Reverend Wilson? Hi, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. You know what? You're a smart lady. You've done a lot.
Well, thank you. I've just done a lot. I don't know how smart I am.
Believe me, with these degrees, you have a radio and TV show at present, right?
I have a television program.
Television. And what do you deal with on your show?
Well, we teach the International Sunday School lesson that's taught in most churches all over the world, and then we have a segment. We have a youth talk back segment, and we have a ministry in action where we try to educate the churches on issues legislatively or from a health ministry standpoint or internationally.
Oh, okay.
That the church should be concerned about.
Yes. You are an attorney?
Yes, I am.
And are you practicing the law right now?
I do church law.
Oh, you do church law?
Mm-hmm.
What is church law?
Represent churches and pastors.
Okay, on issues around churches.
Mm-hmm.
Were you called by God, and if so, when?
Yeah, I was called by God. I wouldn't be preaching if otherwise.
So you didn't go to school to become a minister?
I did go to school, but I acknowledged my calling, and just as I went to school to be a lawyer, I went to seminary.
Oh, okay. At what age were you called by God?
I don't know when I actually was called. I acknowledged my calling in 95.
Oh, okay. I want to ask about women preachers, ministers. It's a big deal now. A lot of women are becoming preachers, and they are taking over the churches around the country. I don't see in the Bible where God called women to be preachers. Why do we accept that as a norm or calling from God today?
I don't see where in the Bible that he specifically called males only. And in the Bible, it does say that your sons and daughters shall prophesy and preach. So that there is indication in the Bible that women preach. We have several models of prophetic voices in Scripture. You have Deborah in the Old Testament. You have Abigail in the New Testament. And then when you look at the women that were around Jesus and the women who were at the tomb, for the resurrection, Jesus first appeared to women. And so there's a clear evidence that God has always used women.
But I noticed that he never put them over men because of that spiritual order of God and Christ, Christ and man over woman, and woman over children, and that order worked. But You know, whenever women are in control or over men, things seem to go to hell in a handbasket. And I think the black community is an example of that, because for the last 50 years, the woman has been pretty much the head of the household, and now everybody's screwed up.
Well,
why do they think? Why do they?
First of all, that is a misstatement, a fact. Based on the welfare system in America, and prior to that, slavery, men were removed from the household, and women were left to fend for themselves and to provide for their families. Men were, because of the way the welfare structure worked, men could not live in the home with their family.
Right, that's true.
And so they were removed, and then women had to try to raise children and provide for families without adequate support.
You're right about that.
And we've gone through an entire period of women having children with absent fathers who refused to either take care of their own children and so forth.
And you're right, and that's why I ask if women, if God had meant for the woman to be the head like that, they have had 50 years of opportunity to do it, and most of the kids end up on...
I don't think that's about women being the head or not. You have a dysfunctional family structure, and we have lost a sense of moral values in our society. There was a time in our society where men focused on people work together to provide for families, and we don't have that kind of system now. We have a culture of total disrespect where men and women refer to themselves as bitches and whores, young girls, and common language, which we did not have. There's a spiritual and moral decay that has existed, which has resulted in the breakdown of the family structure.
But, Reverend, do you think that if fathers were there to head up their families, you know, guide the wife and children in the right way to go, that we would have the type of destruction that we have now within the community?
I think if we had men and women of high spiritual character and of moral character, we would have a better society.
Right.
Just having a male in the house, if he doesn't believe in God and if he is not following God and if he's abusive, as many of men in some households are, it's no more helpful.
Right.
Than to have them absent. I think that fathers should be active in the life of their children, and certainly I don't believe there are single parents except that the parent has died. There's always a parent for a child. What we're doing now in our society is acting as though these kids were not born to two people, but born to one, and that generally has been the female.
Right.
I do not agree with your argument that women are not called to preach. Obviously, I would not have acknowledged a calling that I didn't receive from God.
I don't know. I don't.
And I think that, and I don't want to continue to debate that because I think it's a mute point. I am called. I preach because I'm called, and I preach because I have to. And I don't debate my calling with you or anyone else. It is a fact of the matter. And most women who are called, it's not something that we sought to do. It is something we are compelled to do. It is not an easy calling because we are forced to exist in a male, predominantly male-dominated society, which tends to discriminate against women in terms of how we are treated, how we are respected or disrespected. And yet God has placed us for such a time as this. And so
do you think that
I'm not going to have any more discussion this morning or any other time with you on my calling. It's a fact of the matter. You either accept it or you don't, but I know what God told me to do.
Do you think that men still dominate women, or is it the other way around in society today?
The relationship between men and women is clearly defined in the Bible, in the book of Ephesians. And it says, women submit to your husbands as your husband submits to God.
Right.
But the submission is not under the foot of, but it is respecting and giving.
Reverend, let me take a quick break, and I'll come back to you. I want to talk to you about this hip-hop music. 888-77-5255. 1-800-273-5773. I'll be back in a moment. Jesse Lee Peterson is here with Reverend Jeanette Wilson. Feel free to call in and ask any questions. Back in a moment. 888-77-5773. Jesse Lee Peterson is here. My guest is Reverend Jeanette Wilson. She has a National Sunday School broadcast TV show out of Illinois. And before we leave the airways today, we're going to tell you how to get in contact with the Reverend in case you're in our area or you'd like to watch the program. Reverend, I'm reading your information here. You participated recently or spoke at an anti-war rally recently. Is that true?
Well, I participated in one of the anti-war demonstrations as well as an immigration rally held in Chicago as they were held around the country.
Right.
Challenging our political leaders to end the war in Iraq now because we feel that it was an undeclared war. And it's a war against the word, not against any particular egregious acts on the part of Iraq.
What will you do in place of it? Because if we quit now, the radical Muslims who hate us because we're a Christian nation and we support Israel will come and destroy us.
But that is not true. And I think people should discontinue spewing these words of ignorance and an incorrect description of Islamic faith. They are not basically people of Islamic faith spewing hate. There are some radical terrorists that exist in the world, but to suggest that all terrorists are Muslims is inaccurate and is ignorant to even make that kind of statement. We're not in the war because...
Where's your evidence that all terrorists are not Muslims?
Let me finish my sentence. And you have no evidence for the statements you just made. And to say that on a broadcast indicates to people that what you're saying is in fact true. There's no evidence that we declared war in Iraq on the basis of some religious fanatics who decided to terrorize America. That is not true. The fact of the matter is we funded, trained, and equipped bin Laden, who we were looking for, who we have not yet found. The fact of the matter is we're in Iraq because of the oil, not because of any terrorists. And so you ought to, if we're on the radio or television, we ought to be more accurate in our analysis of world and local events.
So what would you do in place of the war? If we just quit, should we do?
I think that people, we resolve matters with talks. We do not resolve matters with weapons. Weapons kill on both sides. And we have destroyed the culture of a country. We've blown up museums. We have killed innocent children, and families have been just destroyed as a result of our bombs and our efforts. And so it's always better to communicate in conversation as opposed through a violent response, because our violence in Iraq suggests that violence is a way of resolving the differences, and it never results in anything.
So did you feel that way about Saddam Hussein, that the people of Iraq should have tried to talk to him and make peace with him? He was murdering and killing millions of his own folks.
Well, do you think that American presidents who presided over America during the time that several men and women were...
But you're not answering my question. Should the people of Iraq try to make peace... with Saddam Hussein?
I believe that an alternative to... I don't believe in the death penalty. So I believe there was an alternative to hanging Saddam Hussein.
And what was that?
Well, I think that those are some things that should have been discussed with the United Nations, with the World Court of Justice. And I do not think the appropriate measures were initiated prior to his arrest and ultimate death sentence.
Well, what would you say to Israel, who have tried to talk, make peace with their enemies, and the enemies have refused to make peace, and they just want to kill or wipe out Israel?
Well, I think that the talks, generally when you're trying to mediate a conflict, you have to bring both parties to the table with a person who is non-biased to help the two differing parties resolve the conflict, and I think that in every instance you bring both sides to a neutral party to discuss ways of settling the differences and reaching a resolve.
Reverend, you're a very interesting lady. You actually believe that the way to solve an issue with your enemy is to talk to them. Those that their only desire is to kill you and wipe you out, you feel that you need to talk to them.
Oh, certainly. I believe that love ultimately conquers hate. If I didn't, I wouldn't be a Christian.
And so that's amazing to me. That's why I'm surprised and shocked to hear what you're saying, because Christianity teaches that there is good and evil out there, and you can't play around with evil because evil will wipe you out. And these radical Muslims, let me just finish, these radical Muslims hate us because we're Christians. They hate Christians and Jews. They call them infidels. Their children are taught to hate. And you believe that we can deal with evil just by sitting back and talking to it.
I believe that the Bible says love your enemy. And I believe that the Bible provides us a method for resolving disputes. And I follow the teachings and practices of Jesus the Christ. And I believe that the Bible is the inerrant word of God. I follow the Bible. And the Bible tells me that love is the ultimate answer. The Bible says that I and any other Christian must be God's presence in the midst of the city, the nation, and the world. We must be God's power in the midst of the city, the nation, and the world. And we must pray for the people of the city, the nation, and the world.
But if that's the case, why did God give the power to the Jews to wipe out their enemy? They destroyed them. They killed them. They didn't try to appease them, because every time they tried to appease the enemy will overtake them. But he gave them the power to kill them. Why do you think Jesus would be soft, mushy love now?
Well, I don't think Jesus is soft or mushy. He said in his first sermon in Luke 4:18, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me," which is repeated from Isaiah 61. "He hath anointed me to preach," that is, to proclaim the good news, to release the captive, and to heal the brokenhearted, to set at liberty those that are captive, and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. And if we believe that the kingdom of God has come on earth, we are to live as if God is our ruler and not man. And so I cannot think in the ways that you do, which may seem logical, but the Bible says that I must love my enemy.
If these enemies are peaceful, loving people, or
it
we could get
a, if they're peaceful,
but let me ask about,
I must love my enemy.
I know, but let me ask, Reverend, I want, so much I want to talk to you about, because you are very interesting. Bin Laden and the Islamic countries around the world, they enslave women. They don't educate them. They teach boys and girls to put bombs around their waist. They go to school. They take these kids to school and teach them to kill the Christians and Jews, sacrifice their lives, because they're going to have 18 virgins once they get to heaven. They hate Christians and Jews. When you read the Quran, they say you can even lie to the Christians and Jews in order to deceive them, in order to take them out. If these people are not, I mean, if these people can be talked to or made to become friends, why are they trying to make friends with us? Why are they talking to us?
Well, you cannot expect me to look inside the head of my enemy and decide how it is they think or feel. What I am called to do as a person who believes in Jesus the Christ is to act in a manner that Christ would act and think like Jesus. I'm not to have the mind of my enemy. I am to have the mind of Christ. Let this mind of Christ be also in your mind.
But there is no indication that you have the mind of Christ. You're too soft.
Well, no, I'm not too soft. I just don't think like you. I don't have these buzzwords of hatred, because Jesus was a man of love when he was on this side of eternity, and he taught love. I mean, if he hated when he was up on the cross, he would have just called down a legion of angels and said, "Kill all these people that have crucified me and caused me to hang here in severe agony."
But, Reverend, I think what you don't understand, you're right, Christ was about love, but not the kind of emotional love that you're referring to.
I'm not talking about emotional love.
What is love? What love? What is love?
I am talking about an unconditional love for people that are disrespectful. The people that crucified Christ were not people that were necessarily following him. These are people that he had served, he had healed, he had delivered. And yet when asked, should we have Barabbas or Christ, they said, give us Barabbas, crucify Jesus. These are the people that spat on him. They beat him all the way up.
I know, but when Christ mentioned love, Reverend, he was saying don't hate. That's all he meant.
No, what he said was on Calvary, his first word, Father, forgive them. Forgiving is knowing what you're doing to me, yet I am asking God to forgive you because you don't really understand the impact of your actions.
Right, but you don't sit back and let them wipe you out, though. You have to protect yourself.
Don't you know that God has already been victorious over Satan and all of the forces of evil? And so all we have to do is stand in the presence of God, knowing that we are more powerful than any of these enemies that you speak of and others talk about. And so I am not afraid of them. That is why I can speak with so-called gang members across, and I participate in several gang summits. I'm not afraid of our young people, our young children who have been motivated economically and moved into negative spheres. I believe that when you approach people with this unconditional love, that I care more about your soul, I care more about your future than even you do.
Do you think Bin Laden would care about your unconditional love?
I've never met him.
But do you think, in reading about him and seeing the hatred in his heart for us, do you think he would care about your unconditional love?
I think that there's a possibility and an opportunity for all who have been presented with the Word of God to be saved and to therefore be transformed. I don't know if he's ever been presented with the Word of God, with the Word of Christ. And so I believe that that's my job, to present the Word. And if they reject it, then hell will be a much worse place than we can provide for them on this side of eternity. They're going to go directly to hell.
I want to talk to you about the hip-hop music. There's a focus on it right now because of we're kind of ventured off from what Don Imus said when he called the black girls nappy-headed hoes.
Uh-huh.
And now there's a focus on the rap music. Were you offended by, I want to ask a question, but you think about it when I come back from this break. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'll let you respond to it. But I want to know, were you offended by Don Imus' comments when he called the basketball team nappy-headed hoes? And what are you doing about the hip-hop music? What should be done about it, if anything at all? 1-888-775-3773. 1-888-77-JESSE. Lines are open. My guest is very interesting. I'm enjoying this conversation with Reverend Jeanette Wilson. Back in a moment. I am speaking with Reverend Jeanette Wilson. She is a national. She has a national Sunday school broadcast TV show. She's also an attorney. She's active in her community. She's trying to help do good in her community, not just around the country. Reverend Wilson, were you offended by Don Imus' comment?
Well, I think they were racist and inappropriate. However, I think that his comments were made in the context of a complete culture of self-denigration by black women and black girls. As I am more offended by not the hip-hop, but the gangster rap artists, many of whom are female, who use negative language and images of themselves, and then our young people who perpetuate these negative images by dancing to the music, by repeating it, calling themselves negatively, words that we did not use publicly or privately. When I was growing up,
it's
just not positive for you and I to call each other all these negative names and words. And so I think Imus just indicated how far we had allowed this to go, where anybody felt comfortable saying things about us that they have heard us and hear us continue to say about ourselves.
That's a very good point.
Hip-hop is a very positive art form, and it's a cultural expression. Gangster rap, which is what the entertainment industry has promoted and projected and paid for, has taken our young people who are poets and, you know, musicians, and paid them to talk about themselves. I am more offended by Flavor Flav and I Love New York and Missy Elliott
and Snoop Dogg
and Snoop with his For Sizzle My Nizzle, which is still saying favor nigga.
Yeah.
In the language. I'm offended that our young people think it's okay to get paid to say anything and do anything, dance and all of this popping, pop lock and dropping, which is nothing more than a sexual dance that our kids are expressing any and everywhere, publicly, privately, any time they feel like it, at proms and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm offended by that, and I think it's a time for us to call ourselves into some moral order.
Why do you think that type of music was allowed to happen, and why is it out of control within the black communities around the country?
Because the mass media has marketed and paid for it. Anytime a guy like 50 Cent with no real education, no particular background of service, can make the kind of money he's making just cussing and acting a fool, then when you grow up, who would you want to be like? And so they have projected these icons. Anytime you get an Oscar for saying it's hard out here for a pimp, our kids are confused about what makes sense. And we have allowed this mass media to just market to our young people. Hip-hop started as an underground culture. Our rap artists, who were like the last poets and the ancient griots, used to press their own CDs and circulate them underground. Once the entertainment industry found out how much money it could be made using these artists, they started paying them big money.
Right.
And so now you got people on television pimp that ride. You got the MTV and all of these decadent videos. And the kids are making tons of money, more than you and I were making in two or three lifetimes.
Yeah.
Underage 25.
Why do you think that these rappers, both male and female now, why do you think that they hate black women so much that they're willing to exploit them in their music like that? They don't seem to care about exploiting black women. Well, why do they hate them so much?
Well, I think a lot of them have come from families where mothers were not the kind of mothers that they should have been and could have been, and they've had pain in growing up. They've struggled, and, you know, they've had abusive, some of them have had abusive family relationships, and so their response has been to lash out in a very general way, comment on a society that they knew, but not the broader society that exists. It's only the area that they have grown up in. They've been so inundated with pain, the only thing they know to do is to express that pain, and they do it in their lyrics.
You're absolutely right. I agree with you. I talk to men, black men especially, around the world, around the country, mm-hmm. and most of them have grown up in homes where the mothers are very angry. Mm-hmm. The mothers are angry because the fathers are not there, and they
right.
take their anger out on their children.
Right.
And so the kids end up becoming like mama, and they join gangs, and they make babies out of wedlock. They hate their mothers, so they take it out on other black women in the community.
And the other thing is, a lot of mothers in particular have allowed their sons to engage in criminal activity to support the family.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
How do you watch a 40-inch television that's provided by a son who has no job? Where do you get the money from?
So, Reverend, I go back to my original point.
Don't go back there. I told you we're not going back there.
No, this is the point I want to make, though, is that if it was meant by God for women to raise children on their own, we wouldn't have this, because if fathers were in the home as they were prior to the civil rights movement, you would not have this kind of music. You would not have this type of hatred within the black community, and the kids would not be allowed to exploit black women in such manner. Well, but the mothers don't have that kind of control over the kids.
Well, I think it's several issues. The fathers still can have a relationship with their children, and many of them do. I think that to say that the fact that women are in control of the household is the reason why all of this happened, it's economic exploitation. Anytime you have the rising number of black men who are incarcerated, that is an intentional racist move. Anytime the studies will indicate that black and Hispanic men are stopped and arrested more frequently than any other males driving, that don't mean we're the worst drivers. It just means that society moves in a racist manner to incarcerate black men and men of color.
But, Reverend, you sound like you're saying that they are in jail because of the economic situation. But stat shows that they're in jail because they lack character and they are committing crimes.
No, they
have material things.
They're in jail in disproportionate numbers to their white male counterparts, and so there's something wrong with that.
But you know why? Because you have 70%, according to the Census Bureau, you have 70% of black babies born out of wedlock, and so that's why you have more of them committing crime than you see the white guys doing it.
That's not true.
But that is true, according to the Census Bureau.
Well, that's not your analysis is not correct. That's not why more of them are in jail. More of them are in jail because more black men get arrested than white men, and they get convicted of crimes primarily because they, A, can't afford a lawyer. Most of them plead guilty to offenses, whether they've committed them or not, because the defenders will tell them, if you plead, you can walk this time.
But you have to admit that they're doing it because they lack character. They're immoral.
No, they're not all immoral, and that's not true.
Would a moral person commit a crime?
Well, most of them, there's no evidence that they absolutely committed the crime. If you check the records of many of the black men behind bars, they're not guilty of the crimes that they're sitting behind those
bars. Well, how about out of the wedlock birth, 70% of black babies? Is that due to economics or the lack of moral character?
Oh, that's clear, lack of moral character on the part of males and females.
Right.
I don't have to sleep with you just because you tell me to.
So why is it different with the crime then?
The crime rate is based on how people get arrested, who gets arrested, who gets stopped. Anytime you can go into any city in America, and if you're driving while black and male, you will be stopped. There's not one black man I've ever met that has not been stopped, searched, and frisked just because he was black.
It was because black Americans have allowed crime to run rampant in their communities.
You didn't violate any laws, you got stopped.
But, Reverend, if a black man commit a crime, the police officers are paid to
stop. So you're
saying
white men don't commit crime?
No, I'm not saying that, but white people are not excusing their criminals in the manner that black people are. You guys are blaming criminals, criminal actions on quote unquote the system, and that's not true.
What are you, a Republican?
Am I what?
Are you a Republican?
I'm a minister.
Are you a Republican?
Why do you ask me that?
Because you sound like one.
How is that?
You must be a Southern Baptist.
Why do you say I sound like a Republican?
Because you have this skewed view of life that's not based on real facts. And you just run the right-wing evangelical Christian line.
Saying that someone commit a crime because he or she is immoral is a Christian thing or a Republican thing?
No. You said that black men are in jail because they're more criminal than white men.
That they're committing crime. There are more of them.
They're not. And I'm telling you they're not. They're being arrested, and they have studies all over this country that indicate black men are disproportionately stopped, arrested, and convicted in comparison to white counterparts.
And that's probably true, Reverend, but it's because, black men have no problem with committing crimes.
No,
not all.
No, no.
Not all.
Well, look at Enron. What color were they?
But all you're doing now is justifying one wrongdoing with another one.
No, I'm saying to you that white men are criminal. They just don't get caught as often. They don't get stopped as often. They don't get convicted as often because they're white and they get better lawyers because they have more resources.
Reverend, I want to move fast because this time is going by and you're such a good guest. So I want to ask you, I was offended when Al Sharpton, when Imus met with Al Sharpton, because it gave the impression that Sharpton and Jackson and others are the gatekeepers of the black community and that we all agree with them. And as you and I know, that Jackson and Sharpton are immoral. They are racist.
That's not true.
They use racism in order to fatten their own pocket. They have divided the race. And I thought that was a bad impression to give that kind of representation. Were you as offended as I was by that?
Certainly not. I know both of them, and I respect Reverend Jackson and Reverend Sharpton.
What do you respect about them?
Well, the fact that they have been on the cutting edge of fighting for human rights for the last, and Reverend Jackson in particular, for the last 40 years without fail. Now, he is not perfect, nor is Reverend Sharpton.
Did you respect him when he cheated on his wife and made a baby?
Let me finish.
And supported Bill Clinton?
I can respect you. Doesn't mean that I believe that you're perfect. Reverend Jackson admitted to his indiscretions and his failures.
By force.
Many men don't even admit when forced. But the real deal is I try to look at the good that people do, which outweighs the indiscretions, because none of us are perfect. All of us fall short of the glory of God. When I look at they responded to the Ima situation. They brought national attention and perspective on it. And everybody can sit back and say, well, they should have done this, they should have said that. They have a national platform, and they have the national ear, and they were able to raise some concerns.
I want to talk to you about solutions when we come back in the last few minutes we have with you. 888-775-3777. Back in a moment. Winding down the last hour of today's show. This is fun. I've enjoyed this. Reverend Janet Wilson is with me. National Sunday School broadcast TV host, a lawyer, smart woman. I truly enjoyed you, Reverend. I was telling you, Reverend, that I was embarrassed by Jackson and others. I remember when the Duke LaCrosse case happened, Jackson and Sharpton and all of them came out of the woodwork, as they do whenever it's a white-on-black situation. Even though the black girl was a stripper, she had children out of wedlock, there was no real evidence that the LaCrosse guys had molested her. Jackson offered her a scholarship. They seem to support evil and call themselves men of God. I don't understand, Reverend, why you would admire or respect men like that.
Well, because I admire them I admire Reverend Jackson for going to Syria and getting Lieutenant Goodman when nobody else even realized the man was a POW and cared. I admire him for marching in Louisiana when others had forgotten that people have still not been restored to their homes. So
did you admire him when he said that he spit in white people food while working in a restaurant? Did you admire that?
Well, I would not recommend that, but let me suggest this. I don't think that it is fruitful for us to have a discussion on whether or not you like Reverend Jackson. I think that he has done more good than most of our so-called
like what
leaders.
No one can tell me the good that he has done.
He has opened up doors for most of our black businesses.
His friends.
No, not his friends. I have worked at Operation Push. I know when we opened up franchises for African-Americans with the Burger King Corporation when there were none. I remember when the scavengers could not pick up garbage from major food chains around the country. I remember when black people could not get hired to do advertising for major corporations.
You know what I noticed, Reverend?
When the health
Because of time, let me ask you this. I noticed that not all, but most black preachers and so-called leadership don't care that most black Americans are suffering not because of racism, but the lack of moral character. Preachers and others don't seem to deal with the lack of moral character within the black community. They seem to look at the exterior rather than the spiritual actions or identity of black America. Why is that?
Well, I don't think that that's true. I think that racism has played a major role in and had a very negative impact on the viability of African Americans in this country. And
but how has racism caused black folks to have 70% of their black babies out of wedlock? How did racism do that?
Well, I think, you know, racism has contributed to the economic plight of black people. And in many instances, when they changed this whole welfare system where you pay people to have
But Reverend, that's nonsense. People don't have sex because they don't have sex because they don't have money. They have sex out of wedlock because they don't have character. They lack character.
Let me say this. I think that most people do have character. I do think there's a moral decline in our nation.
And especially the black community.
Across racial lines. I think it is immoral for corporations to deposit garbage in communities where people of color and poor people live and not clean up the dumps and the waste. I think it is immoral for people to be forced to live below the poverty level and eat out of garbage cans and live in shelters and not be able to earn a living wage. I think it is immoral for 40 million.
Do you think it's immoral, Reverend, for black on black crime? Do you think it's immoral?
It's immoral for 40 million people to be without health insurance. I think it
is
immoral for the number of homeless people to be wandering the streets of America in a country this rich.
Reverend, you must be Democrat. Are you a Democrat?
I am a child of God.
Are you do you vote Democrat?
I vote independent.
You don't vote for the Democrats. Did you support Bill Clinton?
Of course.
And you did, even though he was a liar, he was impeached, he cheated on his wife, he was corrupt. You still voted for him?
I voted for Bill Clinton.
You voted. That's amazing. How is it that blacks can be...
I want some solutions.
Let me just ask this last question. We'll talk about solution. How is it that you can say that you're called by God, but yet you support a platform or a man such as Bill Clinton and Jackson and others who are totally against God in the way that they live and their actions says that they're against God? How can you be for them?
Well, I don't think they're against God. I do think that they have not, as most people, when God looked down through the corridors of eternity, he could not find one person that could go to Calvary for us except sending himself, divinity wrapped in humanity. So there are none perfect, and there are no men. Even Job, though he were righteous, was not perfect.
But
so,
God asked us to be perfect as he is perfect. He tell us to be perfect so we can become that way.
Have you done anything wrong?
Reverend, not...
Let me just ask you this. When you get to judgment, will God find any fault with you?
God has...
He's the only perfect one we got. And
that's a very good question, Reverend.
You must be the second coming of Jesus.
Reverend, that's a good question. Once God became my father, then I turned away... Hold on. Then I turned away from sin. But these people are saying that they are children of God and even representatives of him, and yet they are sinning with no problem.
That's not true.
That's not true. What is the solution to the lack of abortion out of control, 15 million black babies aborted since the early 70s, 1,500 every day are dying inside the woman's womb, black-on-black crime out of control, false black leaders, corrupt leaders are leading the people to hell, abortion, all this crap going on. What is the solution for black folks, Reverend? How do we solve those issues?
Well, I think, obviously, more people have to really turn away from their wicked ways and turn to God. There's no other answer other than God. Now, on a very practical level, I think that the role of the faith community, the black church, has to really step up its involvement in active ministry and really challenging the political systems to do justly for God's people, but also challenging the people to live as better stewards of themselves and of the resources that God provides.
I believe, Reverend, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong with this, I believe that things are not going to get better for black Americans, those without fathers in their homes, until black men turn back to God and get married and guide their wives and children in the right way to go, turn away from these black preachers and so-called black leaders and start to think for themselves, stop hating whitey, and take responsibility for themselves instead of the government. Less government in your life, the better off you are. And to judge people based on character, not color, because most blacks are racist today toward white folks.
It's impossible for black people to be racist. And I wish you'd stop saying that. You have to have...
How is it impossible? That's
it, because you have, unless you have the power to define and control people, you can't...
Well, that's not true. Racism is just simply hating your fellow man, right?
No, it is not.
Reverend?
It is not.
But, Reverend, how do... I don't believe that things are going to get better until we can put men back in control of his wife,
well,
of their wives and children.
Am
I right about that?
The concern is getting more men to accept God and to live a godly life. And I do think more men ought to consider marriage over and against shacking, or not even shacking, just sleeping and moving on.
But marriage in order to guide and protect their wives and children, right?
Marriage is obviously the biblical way. That's
right.
The preferred way. You should not have children outside of marriage.
So why isn't the focus on the lack of morality rather than blaming whitey within the black community today?
Well, I think that God requires us, he said, to love mercy, do justice, and walk humbly before him. And so it requires us to look at all things. You cannot live in a world that is politically organized and ignore how... the politics of things affect the people of God. And so we have to be advocates for those who cannot advocate for themselves. We have to cause our people to live morally upright and righteous lives.
But that's not going to happen until the father take over, because
this anger,
Reverend, that's been passed down from the black mothers and grandmothers is very destructive. And until
the
father...
it didn't pass from the grandmothers, the anger is from a combination of factors, and it stems and emanates from the men as well. Men are very angry.
Right, but the anger of a man is that of a woman.
No. Where are you getting all the stuff you say from?
I mean, you can look at it, Reverend. These men who are very angry.
You just make up stuff, don't you?
Reverend.
I enjoy talking to you, but you just make up anything.
No, Reverend, you just, what it is, I've enjoyed you too, because you definitely can hold your own. But what we need to do, Reverend, I guarantee you, if you step back and take a second look, you would see that the anger that you find within black men is that of their mothers. They didn't get it from their fathers.
I would with a black man, because I don't believe that's true. You can have some preachers.
But, Reverend, the fathers are not even around, so they can't make their children angry.
Yes, they are. Many of them are around. They're in and out. They show up. They buy little toys and little...
Right, but they're not causing the anger, though. It's the mothers and grandmothers.
They yes, they are.
Reverend, how can the people get in touch with you or watch your program?
They can go to... DirecTV, TCT DirecTV. We're on every Saturday night at 6 p.m. all over the world.
Oh, okay, 6 p.m.
6 p.m. Central Standard Time. I don't know what time it is on the West Coast.
Right, we're 3 hours behind you, I believe. Two or 3 hours.
DirecTV, TCT DirecTV, and if you have the Internet, at 6 p.m. we're on streamingfaith.com. It's the International Sunday School Broadcast. And I wish all of you would watch, and I want you to watch it, because maybe you come to Chicago and come on so we can have a face-to-face debate.
I would love that, Reverend. Let's mark that down so I can come. I would love to do that.
I want you to do that.
Because we got to get some truth within the...
And we have to have these discussions.
Yeah, that's right.
More and more and more and more.
And if you notice, Reverend, most black men, not all, but when it comes to dealing with the black woman and being honest about her destruction... Most black men are afraid to even bring it up because they are afraid of the hostile reaction of black women.
I'm gonna send you a Bible so you can read it so you can be better informed. But I love you.
Hey, I definitely appreciate it. I wish you well, and I would love to come there and be a part of your TV show.
You email me all your information. I will see that you get an invitation.
Okay.
Even though I'm a woman preacher, I'm gonna let you come.
No, I would love to be on with you, Reverend. I respect you not getting too upset when I tell you that women are not called by God.
Right.
I understand that.
Right. RevJWilson@att.net. RevJWilson@att.net. And we are called.
Okay.
And I don't need you to verify, certify, or acknowledge.
Thank you, Reverend.
Thank you.
I look forward to meeting you.
All right.
All right now. Bye-bye. That's amazing. That was fun. Absolute fun. We're here Monday through Friday, folks. Go to my website at bondinfo.org, bondinfo.org. Get the word out that Jesse Lee Peterson's on the air. Peterson is on the air Monday through Friday, worldwide web, and on some station. You just have to find them. If we're not on in your station, in your city or town, call up the local station and say, get Jesse on. I'll see you tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a good one.